tiny bubbles in the wine makes me happy, makes me feel... Hey! Oh, hey, gang. What are you sneaking up on me like that for? Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It is the haunted house of free speech, because free speech is dead, but it's got a ghost, and the ghost is still around, and we're haunting people. That's what we're doing. We're haunting people with the free speech that they used to have, but it's gone now. It might come back. There's such a thing. People have been reincarnated in the past, haven't they? Haven't they? I think they have. Haven't they? We'll see about that. Do you have faith? Do you? Do you really? Okay. Well, we have a really, really big shoe for you today. There's all this stuff going on. Collapse of civilization, impending World War III. So there's all this stuff. We'll check back in at the end of the show, see if the world's still here. But in the meantime, last week I was recording a show with Dr. Duke, and then he wanted to tell a story, but we didn't have time to fit it into the show for last week. So after we finished our recording for the show for last week, he said, "Hey, well, why don't I tell you that story, and you can just stick it into one of your shows next week?" And I said, "Okay, sure." So here it is. It's a story. It's an interesting story. And you heard it here first.
Okay. All right. So we are going to hear this story from Dr. Duke. Now, last week or whenever it was, I played an interview between Peter Jennings and David Duke, recorded in London sometime in 1976. Dr. Duke had been over there, and his visit over there was covered widely, not just by the American press. So there were two separate interviews with ABC News, but also by the British press. And you say there's an interesting story behind it.
There really is a story behind it, and a lot of people have heard this story. I guess not that many of my listeners have ever heard this story, because in the last 10 years we've done thousands of shows. But people always are asking me about it. I go to Great Britain. When I've ever been to Great Britain since, I always get recognized. I've been called out on this and talked to about this and asked about this again and again and again, because it was a very exciting time in my life, and it's one of my fondest memories. So one of the most interesting and effective of my adventures and my trips trying to increase white awareness and Jewish awareness as well, awareness of the Jewish problem and Jewish domination, was in... I believe it was 1978, actually. I thought it was earlier. But it's hard to keep track of the years you think about in terms of events. Anyway, Britain was experiencing massive third world immigration, much like the United States, and British patriots thought that my presence could raise British consciousness of immigration in the same way that my border watch along the Mexican-American border raised consciousness in the United States to the border crisis that America was facing, because the people have heard about that all over the world, too. That was world news. But anyway, Jewish organizations play a prominent role promoting British non-white immigration, and they were able to block all the proposed laws for limiting the alien influx into Great Britain, to the already, you know, densely populated island of Great Britain. Now, by the time I planned my trip to Britain, London was already beginning to experience a taste of the violent crime that plagues America's major cities. And the black crime in Britain was very similar in proportion to that found in the United States, about 10 times higher per capita than the white crime. And racially aware Britons had visited me in Louisiana and gone through the Klan ritual. Some even joined and returned home to set up some Klan dens in England and Scotland. And they wanted me to come over in early 78. I also had a standing invitation for some of the professors at Oxford to come and lecture to some classes on our view of Reconstruction period and other American politics. They thought it was a hoot and interesting, much like I was invited to a couple dozen colleges in the United States of America to speak when we had free speech in this country. And I always had standing ovations, and they wanted me to come as well. Free speech was kind of practiced then. And some media also expressed interest in interviews. So the time was right for me to go, but the problem was that the British government had, when they heard about me possibly coming, they banned me. and they publicized that. Still, I was determined to do what I could try to do to get in. So I decided on this low-key strategy. After letting my beard grow for a couple days, I flew to New York and then flew standby in a flight to Britain on Laker Airlines, it was at the time. That way, the British government wouldn't have no warning or in my arrival time 7 hours later. I stood in front of the passport queue. There weren't too many computers even in those days at British Customs, needing to make a decision, you know. Five checkers were comparing the passport names against the prescribed list before granting the visitor entry visas. Three of them were very spiffy English types, and the other two were black immigrants, plainly from the former the British black colonies in the West Indies.
Can
so
I
being
guess
head of the Ku Klux Klan, what?
Can I guess who you lined up with?
Yeah, I decided to go directly to one of the black West Indians.
What I would have guessed.
Thinking that they would likely be less conscientious. So I immediately smiled to the black guy. And I said, "How you doing, man?" He laughed and lackadaisically failed to look at the prescribed list when he stamped my passport. In fact, they did that probably for most Americans. He stamped it. And once my visa was stamped, I was in the country legally, despite being on the ban list. So at that point, by the way the law works in Great Britain, they really couldn't throw me out, which without making a special rule may make some special decision to get me out of the country because I came in legally. And ultimately, it resulted in me being able to stay longer than even I had to when they finally caught up with me. But anyway, I thought it was apropos that I was able to be in the country to speak against immigration because of the incompetence of a non-white immigrant. I think that's kind of funny. I began meeting with the British Klan members as well as with activists in the British National Front at the time. And it became one of the biggest stories in the British press. So we decided that we would use the publicity to stress the immigration issue, because that's what the British people wanted me to do. So I met with two reporters and the photographer from the largest daily papers, the Daily Mirror, and told them that I was, quote, Paul Revere in reverse. I came to warn my British brothers and sisters about the danger of multiculturalism. I had a lot of fun. So I was telling them all these shows and so forth. Why is it that Britain always gets the worst characteristics of America instead of the better characteristics of America? My late hour clarion call was the third world's coming. The third world is coming, like Paul Revere in reverse. I pointed out that America is rife with racial problems. Go ahead.
No, the third world's coming. So that is Paul Revere.
And I said that Britain had a chance to avoid these terrible problems, keep their peace, because it really was a slight murmur of what it became later, right? And preserve the way of life, but they needed to act soon. And then I said, like I was saying to you, that why is it that Britain and Europe always seem to copy the worst aspects of America rather than the best aspects? Must your cities and schools face the same ruin as ours, the same violence? Mm-hmm. Must you repeat America's clearly unraveling and occurring mistakes? So immediately after doing a number of shows, and it was kind of amazing, the Home Secretary of the British government issued a deportation summons and issued my photograph to every policeman in the country. But through a series
of... Okay, you wound up playing kind of a cat and mouse game with the bobbies for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, and interesting enough, through a series of intermediaries, you know, and other people that were working with me, helping me, I had safe houses, I had everything. And while the British police are searching for me everywhere, this is front page news all over the whole country of Britain. Here's the Express. Clanger Wizard, you know. I'm staying, says Band Clan Chief. Clan Chief sneaks in, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They had cartoons. They had poetry in these papers. And so during this time, I'd even do national interviews. And they kind of sneak me in at the last second, and then they had different ways to sneak me out. It was just amazing. BBC TV did an interview from the backseat of a moving automobile. I mean, I posed in Klan robes to kind of tweak the press, you know, kind of trolling, right?
Uh-huh.
On the most watched television. No, excuse me.
That's one of the very few photos that I've ever. I think I've only seen two photos of you in Klan robes, and one was what is on London Bridge or somewhere.
Yeah, with a view of Parliament, Big Ben in the background.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I did. You know, I came on the most watched television program in all of Britain. That was the Tonight Program. They spell that in Britain with an AMME. On the program, I recounted my Scottish and English heritage and made it plain how much I loved and respected the British homeland and my ancestors. I pointed out I was a Klansman, and I said, I think a lot of Klansmen have fought for Britain and the British people in a lot of wars, to my knowledge, you know, made humor like that, right? And it was just, they loved it, right? And then I said, well, why is your government trying to keep out a visitor of British descent who loves your country and is simply suggesting you should preserve your wonderful nation? While that same government lets in millions into your country that hate Britain and everything it stands for and allows them to live here. Now, after the show, I became so recognizable in London, I actually did some walkabouts among the public, always leaving just before the police got there. And the British people were just loving it. And the media was filming this. They were copying it. There's some interviews I did in Great Britain at the time, too, that you can actually see on the internet. People dug them up from the old archives and everything. The respected British newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, reported my success, you know, my victory in the Tonight program as follows. And this is what they said. Such was Mr. Duke's aplomb in handling the surly aggression of the Tonight program interviewer. Millions of Britons may be forgiven for thinking that there's something to be said for the Ku Klux Klan after all. It was a cat and mouse, Dr. Slattery. And it was developed between myself and Scotland Yard. And I'll give you an example. I remember in the Cunard Hotel lobby. Now, this is in the midst of an interview with a reporter. So the cops got tipped off. Somebody saw me and recognized me. So the bobbies came into the hotel. They stormed in through one of the doors. They jump ahead of them as they came up the like 7,500-foot escalator. I think that's how tall it was. It was a very long one. But it was separated, so they couldn't go across them. I went down one side of the escalator, waving and smiling at them, and dashed out of the street before they could get back down the escalator.
Like a Hollywood movie.
It was a Hollywood movie, but it was real life, you know?
I seem to remember that scene from Barbara Streisand in What's Up, Doc?
Yeah. Well, I think that was, they probably got
that's
the idea.
That's a clear reference for you.
I mean, the headlines read, like, Grand Wizard, of course they were calling me Grand Wizard, does vanishing act. And Bobby's in Keystone Cops fiasco with Klan leader. That was the story about the store. I hope I'm not spending too much time here, but, you know, it's a good story. I got a few more things to share with you if you think it's worthwhile for your program, if it's the kind of show that you could do
you
once in a while.
You go right
okay.
ahead.
So many of the papers actually called me, which is very interesting because I charmed them. They called me the Klan's Scarlet Pimpernel. Now, for those Americans that don't know too much about, you know, British history, the Scarlet Pimpernel is really one of the most revered figures in British history. I mean, the Scarlet Pimpernel was the Englishman, the legendary Englishman, who rescued many of the French aristocracy with a great risk to himself from the terrors of the French Revolution. He was known for his disguises, you know, and his elusiveness, his ability to, you know, just escape, you know, from the all the police in France hunting them. Robespierre and all these other these people in the French Revolution. And despite front page stories every day, it's a little late for me now, I'm getting a little tired, it became a bigger story with every passing day. The event began to be, it began to really capture the imagination of the British people, who, whether or not they agreed with me, they rooted for me, as they would a fox running from the hounds. And the British people in this trip, I mean, it really touched my heart. I've never been received so well by any people in any country I've ever visited. It was really not just me, but it was the fact that the British treated me so underhandedly and the things that they did, right? As they would a fox running from the hounds, so to speak. Everybody would root for the fox, right?
Right. Right.
The British people...
I would, for sure.
Well, we all would, I think. The British people touched my heart, and I realized that they, just like the American people, were overwhelmingly opposed to this immigration that was going to change the whole nature, the traditional country that they loved. But just like in America, the Jewish enemies of their heritage controlled both media and so many of the politicians. So nothing was done to halt this onrushing disaster. The Britain of old. The British people, much like we Americans, are now blessed, you know, by what the media calls the joys of diversity, right? Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to understand how escalating crime and drugs and overburdened welfare rolls and British citizens not even affording to be able to put heat in their homes while they were building mansions and paying all the utility bills of illegal aliens and invaders and failed schools and all this violence. It's kind of hard to think that that's a blessing, right?
Right. So,
Even when I was addressing large crowds of people would not give me up to the authorities. At Oxford University, I lectured to 200 students and faculty and left shortly before the police arrived. Nobody gave me up, you know. A farmer named Beauclair of this farm was planning to have a Klan rally for me. And a cross lighting ceremony, like the Scottish would. By the way, that's where the fiery cross comes from. It's from Scottish lore. It was a symbol that they did to oppose, you know, the tyranny that was coming upon the invasion of Scotland. His farm was like a cool name. It was called the Red Ascot Farm. So he hosted a cross lighting ceremony in the countryside. And interestingly enough, this is a good example of the things that happened. So a massive traffic jam came about on these country roads in Great Britain because the people wanted to come to the ceremony. That was like the biggest event of the year, right, in the whole part of Britain, right? And so what happened was, you know, the Scotland Yard and the police showed up.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
So what happened was, you know, the Scotland Yard and the police showed up, and I didn't show up, right? The very next night, I went to Red Alscott Farm and we held another cross-lighting. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that happened. I did a radio program at a studio in East London, and when the police arrived, I escaped, you know, through a side door, you know, and I mean, it was just, and every newspaper was headlining this. So the newspapers continually referred to the guy that was head of the secretary, equivalent to the secretary of the interior, the home secretary, is like Merlin Reese. And so the media was constantly.
It's more than the same. I mean, it's actually more like Homeland Security when you get down to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably true. And guess what they headlined the headlines about this? Merlin and the Wizard.
Oh, that's
now many poems were written and published about the affair. Hundreds of political cartoons were published, which I did a whole collection of them. I saved them, which were entertaining and sometimes quite effective for our issues. I'll give you one example and the audience one example. How are we doing on time? We still got 5 or 10 minutes left?
Yeah, you tell your story.
Okay, so he showed a, you could even do this in another story. It's almost like watching a radio program play on radio, right? Anyway, so they showed, one of the cartoons showed a line of immigrants at the welfare office, which was kind of making fun of the welfare immigrants and how the welfare office was being overwhelmed by immigrants, overwhelmed. And one instance, they showed this line of immigrants at the welfare office, and a robed Klansman, I guess that was me, talking with the officer saying, "I've been here for so long, surely I'm entitled to something." You like that one? That got a laugh. Like, it was all such great, great fun. I can still even remember the poem, but you know, that was fun. And then it was like a circus atmosphere. And then, as like I was telling you earlier, one of the major papers said Mr. Duke is a smooth, plausible spokesman, the best imitation the Klan's ever had of a good guy.
All right.
Best imitation, huh?
Thank you for that story.
I'm almost finished. If you want to hear the rest, it's almost over.
Don't finish it. Yeah.
Okay. So I want to give you the poem too, which is kind of funny because here was the poem that was published in the New Statesman. "Sing a song of watchdogs, hoping for a fluke. 20,000 policemen hunting David Duke. Catch a clever Klansman, wrap him in a sheet." But nobody found it. Nobody could trace him. Not for love or money. Jardine called it farcical, but no one found it funny. Now that he's been cornered, we praise our smart police. You'll find him in a public house or posing on the street. But most of all, the wizard's wand should go to Merlin Reese. So one afternoon, while all Scotland Yard searched for me, I met with a reporter in a restaurant of all thing called The Fox and the Geese, almost not quite The Fox and the Hounds. And a reporter came into the meeting because the reporter had tipped them off so he could get the biggest story in Great Britain, right? And by the way, it was one afternoon, I actually had the interview in Fleet Street with Peter Jennings and many other media. I saw the picture of me in front of Scotland Yard go all over the whole world. But anyway, this reporter comes in, and we talk, and in about 10 minutes, suddenly, two Scotland Yard policemen come in. And they come up to the table. The reporter looks something like me. We both had mustaches at the time. And I was just in a normal suit. I actually was dressed up more than the reporter. And the reporter thought that, the policeman thought the reporter was me. And so... it's just amazing. So
what did you do?
Well, I gotta think about that a second so I remember it properly. Oh, it was called The Fox and the Hounds. I see now in my notes it was The Fox and the Hounds. Both the reporter and I had mustaches, as I said. And due to bureaucratic incompetence, the agents mistook the reporter for me, and the lead agent said, and I think he read it from a script, if I remember correctly, "Well, Mr. Duke, you have led us on a merry chase, but now we finally caught up with you." And this is all reported in the paper, article about this. And then he handed the reporter the summons. And in a poor imitation of a British accent, I mumbled something about filing the story and actually made it out of the pub while the reporter comedically tried to tell the Home Office, you know, undersecretaries are the people there that they had the wrong man. So I started to run away in the darkness, and but they caught up to me only five doors from the safety of a home of a...
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. owner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's one, RAD, consistent results when used for heart problems. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious that if he hadn't made it to the hospital in time, he would have died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives, he tried Extendivite. While taking Extendivite, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Secretaries are the people there that they had the wrong man. So I started to run away in the darkness, and but they caught up to me only five doors from the safety of a home of a supporter. The papers reported that I appropriately said, "God save Britain and the Queen." That should have said that on the anniversary of the Queen's time of the Queen's death. Upon the giving me the summons, my friends engaged a good solicitor. And I was able to stay free a few more days and make a considerable number of more appearances before I finally left to go back home.
That was worth it. I want to thank you for sharing that with my audience.
Well, I do. And I viewed the video strip as a tremendous success because it made many people confront the immigration issue in some ways like the Border Patrol and in some ways like Donald Trump. Made it an issue, and it even had an impact in America because dozens of national wire stories came out, and it actually led to many, many, many more interviews, public appearances, speeches, college speeches, and everything else. And Ben Bradley ran a wonderful set of articles on our organization, Los Angeles Times. Ben Bradley, that was the son of the famous Bradley, and
yes.
I was also interviewed by the son of.
And Post.
Yeah. Ben Bradley, that's right. And he it was amazing. And it was a very decent article as well. And later I met Chad Huntley and Brinkley, you know, was one of the biggest newscasts. I'm sure you saw that many times when you were a kid.
Okay, it was NBC News in the 1960s.
Yeah. And David Brinkley's son, who later became worked for the New York Times, believe it or not. But he did an interview on me, which was very fair, extremely fair and good, right? And we became friends. And later on, to show you the different world we lived in, David Brinkley and his wife and his son invited me to their house for dinner. And we had a wonderful dinner. And as always, I always talk about politics. And I can say this now that I think they've passed, for sure. And even my friend, the son, he's gone now. But I can tell you that they are very sympathetic with me on even the Jewish question, even maybe more than the racial question, but on many other subjects. And we had a great time. And they broke out a special bottle of wine, and they wished me luck. And I kept in touch with him for a number of years until I heard about his death.
Wow.
That's one more story.
Well,
I got a thousand of them, but I can document everything I say. Anybody who wants to check out the British story, it's all there in newsprint in Great Britain. Just go to the archives.
Well, yeah, and of course you can go to YouTube and you can see a lot of this stuff. That's how I found the Peter Jennings interviews, and I think people should look at your old interviews, and even Dr. Duke, I think you should look at some of them again. And if Tucker does ask you on his show, I think part of your preparation would be to go back and watch your interviews, because really, I mean, you handled these people masterfully. So
you talk a lot about the young man of the American First Movement, which is a movement, you know, I call my campaign America First. And he's very articulate, and he doesn't need any help or advice from me. But you know what?
Nick Fuentes.
Oh, yeah, Nick Fuentes. But I don't think he needs any help from me. But I tell you something. I've always studied the way, and I've always said this about people in the movement. We study a lot about the ideas, but we don't study how to deliver those ideas. We study very little about what's called apologetics, and that is the ability to make an effective argument. We don't talk and study about persuasion. We never talk about psychology. And as some of the interviews you've seen, even in hostile audiences, and just like some of the things they did in Great Britain, I understood this because I've always devoted myself to understand these things. And I do think that people, if they dig up the Tomorrow Show, if they dig up these very successful shows, the last show I did, and you can't get that on the internet because they've suppressed that. I mean, the guy was actually destroyed. Salon Magazine ran the story that David Duke, you know, destroys, the guy who did Meet the Press at that time. But anyway, and he said he schooled him so badly that he gave anybody a lesson on how to handle the guy in future interviews. Well,
okay, so if that was Salon Magazine, that would have had to been like at least the 1990s, right? When was that interview?
In the 90s.
Okay, in the 90s. Okay.
And I was on there three times. So how can you be on Meet the Press three times? How can you, you know, the only successful guy I know that's talked openly about the Jewish question again and again, they don't talk openly about racial questions long before Trump did and succeeded, actually won an election.
Trump really never talked about it. Tucker's starting to talk about it. Trump never talks about racial questions.
Right. Well, exactly right. But how can that person, you know, be like an un, you know, like, you know how they have, at least have Coca-Cola and the Un-Cola, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How can I be an un-person? I mean, it's kind of interesting. And the truth is that I think that the vote totals that I got, which were amazing, I got landslides of white voters in every major race that I won. For U.S. Senate, for governor, you know, landslides of white votes. And I even won the vice presidential nomination for the Democratic Party became a conservative Republican.
New Hampshire vice presidential primary. Most states don't have a presidential primary, but New Hampshire does.
That's the same one that Al Gore won 4 years before, by the way. I mean, that's pretty interesting. And people knew who I was. So, I mean, this is something maybe that we should, you know, used to be encouraged by. And remember, most of you guys out there, you know, I did original trolling when I was that age, one time with a swastika that was just a stunt basically to call attention to what I was doing. I mean, Rockwell kind of said, if you're really outlandish and you do things like that, you're going to get covered by the media, And at that point, I was really being ignored by the media.
And you were a college student, though, right, with the swastika?
Yeah, I was just college student. I was 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And I just did it to expose the communist qualities of Kunstler, the guy who was the Jewish attorney for the overwhelmingly Jewish Chicago 7, Jerry Rubin and all the rest of those guys.
Gerard Seven, who was arrested in 1968 at the Democratic primary. Democrats in Chicago.
You were probably fans of those guys then, maybe, or you were too young.
No. I was a McCarthy fan, and I was a kid, but they were just making chaos out of the convention. I was a serious Eugene McCarthy fan. Didn't do McCarthy any good.
Of course, when I demonstrated against them, and when I had a showdown with Jerry Rubin at LSU, I mean, a face-to-face showdown where the guy turned his tail and ran. You know, he was talking about killing you should kill your parents and how you got to kill racists and all that. And I'd done a bunch of things at LSU, and I would come up and I would ask these people questions. Like Dr. Spock came, and I said, Dr. Spock, you know, you made millions of dollars. And you keep saying that we should have income equality in this country, you know, that a lawyer should make the same thing as a garbage truck guy. And you want to make laws that will make people pay out the money that they earn, if they earn money from their business or a job, force it from them by the government to make everybody have the same income. And I said, but here you are. You're a multimillionaire. You own your own island in the Caribbean, and you have a private plane and everything. And I said, so if you really believe in this, if you want to force everybody to do it, you say that African Americans and everybody are being so discriminated against and being so oppressed by the government and everything. So shouldn't you decide to take a salary or make your salary the same thing that they make and give it all to the black people of this country or the poor people of this country? Shouldn't you give that up? If you demand to make people give it up in the government, can you imagine? I tell you something, the Daily Rebel, the school newspaper, said the only great questions that were asked that night of him were those questions. And he just stuttered and he stammered. He couldn't do anything. I mean, he was totally disgraced by that. Yeah, why wouldn't he? He would advocate forcibly taking people's money and income tax, but he... You know, but he's not willing to donate people the money when he's a champion of these people, right? And the other thing that I asked him on the stage, the edge of the stage, but it was with a mic, I asked him about, he was talking about it a lot in the speech, how the Vietnam War was winding down at this time. And he was talking about Vietnam War. We've got to get out of Vietnam and we got to come home and we're killing all kinds of children there and we're hurting people and all the other aspects of the Vietnam War. So I might even agree with that. But then I asked him this question, which really put him on the spot. I said to him, okay, Dr. Spock, we're already withdrawing from Vietnam. The Vietnam War is effectively over. It's finished. And but right now, every day we get deeper and deeper and deeper into the Mideast, and we keep sending weapons to Israel, and we keep supporting the Israeli state, which is murdering people, which is killing people, which is oppressing people, which is stealing their land, which is occupying a whole land, right? And even at this time, it was after the, I think, the capture of the West Bank, and it's after 67. And I said, so if you really oppose the war, because you don't want, you know, to see children die in war anymore. If you really oppose the war, then would you support the complete banning of any American taxpayers' money to the state of Israel? And he started stammering again, and he said, what was his exact words? He said something like, that's a different situation. That is a 2,000-year-old, you know, conflict, and you have to understand that, blah, 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 blah. And both those questions were talked about in the student newspaper by, I guess, a fairly honest person who was learning his journalism, and they both said that those were good questions. Those are just a couple of the incidents. You can read about all this in my book if you want to, My Awakening. And we got to get that out. And by the way, I want to remind people who supported us in the reprinting of the book a good while ago, over a year ago, that anybody who sent money and wants a refund for the money they sent, we have the record of it. And I will immediately send them the money back if that's what you want. Even send you a T-shirt and thanks, or even a copy of another one of my books, Jewish Supremacism, to help with that, for the fact that I've had your money for time or used it on our work. I said, if you want a refund, I just want you to know you can have it. And or if you want to wait, I should be able to have it done at some point. But I'm really sorry for that, and I feel really bad about the fact that I haven't finished it. It's turned into a monumental effort to get the book updated.
You do plan on finishing it, right?
I do plan on finishing. I am working on it quite a bit. I've worked on it a great deal. I've got it about 3/4 finished, but boy, there's a lot of stuff in here, and I've got to figure out what stuff to take out that with new material on all these facts. And I've got to start, keep talking about what stuff to update. I got the COVID to do it, the Epstein firing. I mean, there's so many things. The Ukraine war has even added stuff to it. I mean, it's like it's one long repetition of the same story.
But it
needs to be in that book, because that's really my magnum opus. And I think it's been the best read book in the world on both the Jewish question, and it's been the most read book in the whole world. It's even probably gone as big as the Protocols of Zion, even though that's the most frequently named book. But this is a huge book. It's had hundreds of millions of readers now. It's even in PDF and things like that, and we sell copies of that. We put them on disc and sell copies of it. You can get it that way. But right now, I can't even take a credit card. I gotta make sure I raise the money for it, and I really haven't had the money after the last year and a half of not being able to collect most of my contributions. We're just struggling to keep the show going on that we do on rents. We struggle to just keep the rent paid, you know, and the house payments paid, or the whatever we need to pay in terms of the work that we do. All the money I get, basically, except for a little bit I need for my survival. My Social Security is only a small amount of money. And it all goes into this cause. So that's really where I am. But I am working hard on this, and I'm overwhelmed. I used to have two or three employees. I don't have those employees anymore. I can't afford them. And as it is, so that makes some of my time spent in the house and in terms of the business aspect of the group and the publishing and editing and all the other things I do. And that's really also restricted my time for the book. So those are some of the reasons why it's so late. I apologize for those people who've been looking for it for a long time. And again, anybody that wants a refund, they're more than welcome to have a refund with a bonus of maybe a book and a T-shirt. In fact, I'll even give you that. That's even an incentive. Or you can send a contribution and I'll give you a book and T-shirt. But if you want your money back from that gift, to get that book, and if you keep it in stock here, if you don't make me stop putting you on the list, then when I get the book out, you will get a signed, autographed, and certified copy of the book, and a numbered copy of the book, which I think will be a collector's item. Just as my old book now is sold sometimes for $200 or $300 on eBay or other auction sites. So that's it, folks. And thank you, Dr. Slattery. It was enjoyable. You might have put this in two parts. But,
Well, thank you very much for joining me.
But I don't think anybody's going to go to sleep with this one, that's for sure.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Dr. Duke.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I think that was an interesting story. And, you know, one of the things that I was struck by over the past couple of weeks, as I was listening to the very old, almost half century old interviews that he gave in London with Peter Jennings and someone else from CBS News. It's not just that how long David Duke has been doing this, but how incredibly prominent he was earlier in his career. He was much more prominent than he is today. You know, people, and when I say that, I'm not trying to knock him, but he was regularly in the mainstream media at a time when the mainstream media was much smaller and dominated by just a few companies. You know, you had the three TV networks, and he was on them an awful lot. All right, well, we're coming up on this break. We'll be right back.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's...
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Hello, I'm Peter Serafine, and I'm the new host of National Intel Report on Thursdays here on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm a gun-owning constitutionalist who believes that the only role of government is to protect my rights. I believe the First Amendment makes us free, and the Second Amendment keeps us free. If those ideas sound good to you, then join me in the National Intel Report, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Welcome back to the show. Okay, I just did a quick scan of headlines. There's obviously important stuff coming out of Russia, out of Ukraine, out of that whole area. But I had, if you want to hear my latest on these things, you can listen to the David Duke show, which should already be posted. If you go to davidduke.com, you should be able to access that show. And with the remaining few minutes we have here, I'm going to do an update on Co-Certified, which I was like the national spokesman for Co-Certified, and they were totally my sponsor. And you might have noticed a few months back, I stopped my daily shilling for Co-Certified, and you will probably notice that you're not going to be hearing the Co-Certified ads on RBN, at least for the time being. There's a change in ownership that is in process. So the ownership and management is changing. It's still going to be totally awesome. How could it not be awesome? Its mission is an awesome mission. And you can still go to thekosherquestion.com, and I will continue to link to it from nationalbugle.com until otherwise instructed. But at any rate, it's you know, there are things going on that I'm not privy to, but there's going to be change in ownership, change in management, and so I'm not going to be their national spokesman. They're not going to be my sponsor, but that's all fine. And you know, and I know Jazz Hands on Fast the Nations. Jazz Hands was also a spokesman. And one thing I will miss, I have to say, I'll miss those big kosher-tified conventions. And you know, Jazz Hands and I would, that's where we'd get together and we'd shoot some pool and you know, talk story. And so I'll miss that. You know, those giant conventions that we had in the kosher-tified stadium that was built. Co-certified. The lore, oh, the history. You can still go to thekosherquestion.com, and here I'm going to leave you with this. There's a couple of new quotations on their front page. Here's one: "No man shall be compelled to frequent or support any religious worship or ministry, or shall otherwise suffer on account of his religious opinions or belief, but all men shall be free to profess and by argument to maintain their opinions in matters of religion." This is from Thomas Jefferson. It is inscribed on the walls of his memorial in Washington. I think we're being compelled when we're with this kosher certification stuff. I think we're being compelled. Here's one more quote: "Religious belief is not used to harm or infringe on the rights of others by government action or others in the public marketplace." Well, that's from the ADL vision statement. Oh, God. It's their vision statement on religious freedom. I think we're being infringed on. But anyway, that's that. I will be back again, hopefully with Paul Stevenson, for another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
I'm so in love with you, but is it all right with me? 'Cause you make me feel so brand new. I want to spend my life.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today. Because